Fred Film Radio, International Film Festival, Rotterdam, Netherlands.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2018 International Film Festival, Rotterdam, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Robert Klem, who's presenting his film, How They Got Over. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I'm pleased to be here, of course.
All right, so the first question is kind of just the obligatory question. Would you like to tell our listeners what your film is about?
The film basically is called How They Got Over. It's basically how African Americans in the early 20th century, having nothing, no other way to make a living, they discovered that they could possibly go on the road and sing, make money that way, because that was a point when records were coming out, radio was coming out. So that's the story that way. But it's also, we talk about all of the gospel quartet music, and how influential that was on early rock and roll, because the gospel quartets were so competitive with each other. They developed so many experimental techniques, bending over backwards, you know, a lot of things that you saw in the early rock and rollers, and even Mick Jagger. You know, Mick Jagger's, I mean, some of this stuff comes directly from these gospel quartets who were doing it, I guess, in a spiritual mode, you know, and so that's basically what the film is about. It really examines quite a few of the mostly unknown gospel quartets that were around in the 40s and 50s, and there's a lot of music, a lot of concert footage, and so it's really an entertaining film, I think. People like it.
There's also contributions from the people who lived through the era and played in those bands and performed. Some of them, I guess, are is the last kind of, you know, interviews on or on, you know, time they appeared on the screen.
Well, that's true. We it was timed. It was good timing because, yes, I think probably five or six people that we interviewed are now gone. They're now dead because, you know, we got them just in time, I guess you could say. And they were wonderful people, very articulate. Ira Tucker, Vicki Freeman, a lot of people were really this special. I mean, just for me to meet them and to be with them was an honor in itself. I mean, they were just great people.
Very funny anecdotes as well, you know. But life on the road was not easy. And I often read about it, you know, even just before then with jazz and traveling bands, when they started traveling, the territory bands and the traveling bands, it was a different system. But, like, nowadays when you think of touring, you think of, like, groupies and all this, you know, big, massive private jet planes or whatever. But it wasn't like that at all back then, right?
Well, no, it wasn't. I mean, I think usually people would put them up in their houses, or you know, they would get free meals because first of all, the people that were enjoying this music didn't have any money. I think that was the thing. I mean, they were churches, and I think they played in schools and you know, high schools, because at that point, at least, there just wasn't that kind of music industry that we have now. You're right. And so it was very hard on the road, absolutely hard. And most groups actually just never made it. You know, the ones that did, they went on into the 50s, and but even then it was very difficult. And a lot of them, as the film points out, a lot of the groups in the 50s, when the crossover thing started happening, they crossed over to popular music, because right, that's the only way they can make any money, basically.
And even to make a record, I guess, was different, because at some point, I guess, I can't remember exactly who says it, but he says it was a big deal to have a record out there, because then you could get called, you know. Different. So that aspect of the industry was very different as well.
Recording.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Most of the major labels didn't really want to deal with this very small segment of the market. So there were small labels that came up, Savoy and VJ and others that would record these people. I mean, and the thing is, the guys would usually never get much in the way of money out of the records, but the thing is, the record made them well known, and so they would get more in their performances.
Why was there no interest from the labels to record these bands?
Well, I guess they thought that there just wasn't as much of a market for that as there was for well, the other types of music that were going. I mean, Glenn Miller or all the jazz groups and so forth, that was the popular stuff. This was really mostly, at the beginning, was mostly for a black audience. Yeah. There was never, it's almost always a black audience all the way up into the late 40s. But I think at that point is when, that's when it started crossing over, because some whites started beginning to appreciate the gospel music. And they also realized, once again, that Well, it was a very entertaining, upbeat, energetic music, and that kind of then that translated or evolved into a doo-wop and some R&B. And really rock and roll.
It's great to see the evolution of the music as well. You know, it's great to see how it evolved. And one of the I guess evolutions, the most important ones was when they started taking these the music on the road. And one of the things that the documentary gets into was this the dangers of the perception of the music becoming secular.
A lot of the early music was came from spirituals, from the Negro spirituals from slavery days. Then they started writing new music, and inevitably some of the blues elements and popular elements actually got into the gospel music. And then they started using guitars. Now, see, at that point, the church establishment, let's say, really objected to this. They thought that that was becoming too much like popular blues music or whatever. But the thing is, once the guitars started, it was it, because the guitars were just incredible. I mean, they really had great guitar players. And then they developed a full band with drums and everything else. So, you know, it started off with a cappella gospel based on spirituals, and it evolved into just an incredible, it really was a full band. Rocking, really rocking.
It wasn't just great vocalists, it was also great musicians. And, of course, the first one that comes to mind is Sister Rosetta Tharpe on her guitar. And you have a wonderful piece in the song where, you know, anyone watching it will see, oh, man, she was kick-ass. She really was.
She was kicking it. Well, yeah, Sister Rosetta Tharpe was important. I mean, she really helped all these guys, the men who were trying to do these gospel quartets, and she would help them put them on her shows. And I think that was true all over in the gospel music field, that they would help each other.
Yeah, yeah.
They would help each other because, I mean, that, I don't know, I guess they felt that they were all in it together.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and they weren't competitive. They weren't trying to prevent someone else from being successful. They were, so they had that kind of attitude.
Yeah, speaking of attitude, another thing that stands out to me is from hearing about the hardships of the road and even just the things that happened to them. I guess, you know, the racial thing comes into play as well. When they were performing, they looked like they were happy. And even talking about it, you know, they remember it as a joyful time in their lives now.
Sure. I say it's true, but I think they had a great time because they did. Well, they just joked and laughed and they rode in the car. I mean, I don't know. I can't really put myself in their shoes, but I do think that they really were doing something that was exciting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, otherwise they would have been at home picking cotton or doing drudge work. There weren't that many jobs. And
yes.
So the music gave them an opportunity to make something of themselves. So they were happy to have that opportunity.
Sam Cooke, the arrival of Sam Cooke, was pretty interesting during, I think, the later stages, the final stages documentary. You get into it as well.
Well, yeah, Sam Cooke is the example of what they called a smooth gospel. Because the thing is, there were several iterations of gospel. There was hard gospel, which was like screaming and shouting. And then after that, I guess you could say they developed the smooth gospel, which really was pushing it towards some of the secular forms. And of course, Sam Cooke did move over to secular music because, you know, they couldn't make any money in gospel. And so, of course, the church was very disappointed that Sam Cooke moved over, and they would say that, he's the devil's music. They said secular was, some people were that way, it's the devil's music. But, you know, this is the way some people were. But I think overall, people were quite happy that Sam Cooke had that kind of success. I mean, first of all, his secular music was always very positive. I think, you know, somebody said he was still in church when he was doing his pop songs. he was very positive that way, you know.
Well, there's so much that I could ask you, just quite simply because, as you can hear from my voice, the excitement in my voice and my excessive stuttering, I'm very interested in the music, but I'm also interested in the film itself. And obviously, I would presume that it was difficult to make the decision of what bands to talk about and what aspects of the evolution of the music to discuss.
Well, actually, there was only so much footage to be found, in a way. I mean, the thing is about these groups, since they were primarily singing to black audiences, There was very little filming, or there was no television in the 40s. The 40s was really the heyday of the whole thing. And so it was mostly on radio. There was no film. So the film we got really was later. But it does I think it captures what was really happening in the 40s as well, you see. I mean, the fact that they were trying all these techniques to get over. That's the whole idea of the film, is how to get over. Because the whole idea was they were always competing to wreck the house. To wreck the house, to get the audience excited. And they were competing. And whichever band did that got the prize, if there was one.
Right. Yeah. But the bottom line is, it was difficult to find the footage, so there isn't much footage around. How did you find it?
Oh well, most of it came from a TV show that was called TV Gospel Time. So it was captured or stored at a university down in Nashville, Tennessee. But mine came from New York Public Library. They had it. I mean, it was difficult to get it out of them, actually.
Very protective of their stuff.
Well, they weren't sure if I could legally use it. You know, I had to go out and do a little legal work of my own to determine that it was, in fact, usable. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was in the public domain.
How long did it take to make this documentary?
Well, all right. So I started 12 years ago because, you know, I started with Jerry Zoltan, my co-producer, and Ira Tucker. I interviewed both of them the same day. Well, you know, I knew that both of them were so great. I said, well, this is a great film. But from there on, it kind of was slow because funding for it. And also, I wasn't sure how I wanted to structure the film. I mean, I went back and forth on various ways of doing it. I think ultimately, I've had some people that were helping me, some collaborators who helped me edit it, figure out the structure.
Right.
And
But you were a fan of the music before you started.
Oh, absolutely.
Any favorites?
I like the Soul Stirrers. I like the Blind Boys of Mississippi are really good. But I think that, and also, the girl groups, they call them the girl groups. They were, I think, generally everybody agrees that they kind of steal the show in this film because they're really powerful. And so someone is saying I should do another film and focus on the girl groups.
Yeah.
I don't know, but maybe if I can find it.
I think there's an audience out there for them. And their stories need to be told, too. You know, I mean, I'm such a fan. I didn't even know about the Blind Boys of Mississippi, but the Soul Stirrers, they're a really cool find for me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Most of them I didn't know about.
Well, see, a lot of these things, though, are not available. Like, there's no footage, no footage of Sam Cooke in the Soul Stirrers.
Yes.
None. That's too bad.
Isn't.
No. None. I mean, not that I've...
There's very little Sam Cooke footage in general, I think. You know?
It may be.
Anyways, but thank you very much. Thanks very much for talking about the movie.
You think we've covered everything?
not really, but it's 15 minutes into it.
I hope you can use it.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.